Bonjour, mes amis, c'est vendredi, and this is John Williams, and I'm speaking French because I just got back from France and had a great time, and thank you guys for filling in on last week's edition of The Mincing Rascals. That's what this is. It's Friday, and as always, you've got, well, me, John Williams, Eric Zorn, Chicago Tribune columnist, Kristen McQuarrie, columnist and editorial writer for the Tribune, and WGN Radio's Steve Bertrand. Hi, kids. I missed you guys.
Hello, John.
Missed you too.
We missed you tragically, John.
Actually, it was a pretty good show last week.
It was actually excellent.
We thought it was
really
nice.
I noticed it had a lot of views and likes, so let's not dwell on that. It's weird, though, when you go on a vacation, isn't it? Because as much as you enjoy being away and almost literally not having to think about it, you want to think about it, you want to stay in touch, and you know that you have to catch up when you get back. So I was kind of torn between those two things. Mostly, though, I must say, Paris being what it is, I didn't have to think about Donald Trump or Denny Hastert or taxes or the NFL draft very much. I just enjoyed Paris. And one of the things I noticed, if I just may say, is that they are as mystified by what the hell we're doing here as some of us are. You talk politics to anybody, and mostly we didn't, either in the group or with the citizens, but if it ever came up with a Parisian, including our guide, who was very articulate, knew the American scene, had very good English, and she described for me how in France they have a right-wing super-nationalist candidate who's attractive, is getting traction, and she said she has all of these wonderful ideas and sayings, but no real policy. There's no real, nobody knows how she's going to do the things she says we're going to do.
That's
really?
Marie Le Pen, right?
Yeah, right. And she talked about her story and how attractive she is and how people are flocking to her and they're, you know, waving their fists in the air. And I said, boy, are you describing our scene too. We'll get to that in a minute. But first, let's start with the latest news on Denny Hastert. And the fact that in Illinois now, we're thinking about changing the statute of limitations laws. Is that right, Eric? Is that where that is this week?
Lisa Madigan, our attorney general, has said she wants to look into doing that. Yeah, and a couple of years ago, I think it was starting January 1st, 2014, according to a law that Pat Quinn had promoted, the statute of limitations no longer applied to child sex offenses that took place after that date. And I think what Lisa Madigan is looking into is going back and retroactively removing the statute of limitations so that, say, if you were abused in the 80s, as Dennis Hastert's victims were in the 70s,
probably,
80s,
yeah.
Maybe even, you know, 90s. I mean, the statute of limitations is, you know, right now I think it's like 3 to 5 years for most offenses like that, maybe three. To extend that, maybe to eliminate it altogether so that you can go back and say, you know, this priest, this teacher, this evil neighbor molested me back in, you know, 20 years ago, and I'm just now coming to terms with it, and I want criminal charges.
So would that apply then to the Hastert victims as well?
No, I don't think it would. It's hard to believe that they would be able to make them retroactive.
No, that would be a double jeopardy, wouldn't it?
Because he wasn't tried for it.
No, I mean, the thing is, I think that I don't understand the law that well. There is some Supreme Court dicta on this that talks about the making it, you know, you can't change the nature of an offense after it's happened, you know, legally, so that I think going back and saying, okay, that offense had a 5-year statute of limitations or 3 or whatever it was back in the 70s, we're going to now say that it's infinite. I don't know that you can do that, and I think
how about going forward. I mean, we've talked about that on this podcast before. Maybe we ought to at least say going forward there's either going to be a much longer statute of limitations or none at all.
I can't imagine a politician voting against that, and because it's just a really popular position. There is a problem when you are accused of something 25 years ago, say, that you probably have no records at all. You have no memory to defend yourself. You may not have, you know, no, like, who were you with at a certain time? Like, oh, this happened at this time, at this place. And you say, I'd have no memory of where I was on that date in that place. So I can't mount a defense. Whereas something more recent, it's easier to mount a defense. And that is part of the reason that we have statutes of limitations in the first place.
Well, but then maybe the burden's that much higher. I mean, I don't know exactly how the law would work or what the judge or jury would say, but if somebody on the stand was saying, golly, I don't remember what happened in the wrestling locker room 25 years ago, I would be sympathetic to that. I mean, my gosh, I don't know where I was 25 days ago.
Okay, so you're the juror, and you have a man who says 25 years ago, this other man abused me. This is my memory of it, and this is what happened.
Yeah.
And the defendant says, well, I don't remember that. I mean, that's
Answer that. How would you answer that, Steve?
I think that's rife for miscarriage of justice, frankly, and I think it's very risky.
If you were on the jury, who would you side with? If it was a he said, he said,
that's frightening to me, and that's why I think statutes of limitations are important sometimes.
But also, if you trust prosecutors, they wouldn't take a case that had just total circumstantial evidence. They might hear you out. They might convene a grand jury or something, but I can't imagine that you would be able to have any sort of a case if it's just some person's word against another person's word. I mean, that's why we have the civil system, that where a lot of these victims have gone to try to get some sort of justice for what happened to them, for example, with the pre-sex abuse cases.
Well, or in this case, where you really what you do is you just pave the way for a kind of legal. Let's do a contract. We'll agree. You'll pay me $3.5 million in $50,000 or $100,000 or $25,000 increments over years until I get enough money. And otherwise, I'll ruin at least your career if I can't throw you in jail. And Denny Hastert agreed to that. And this person has remained anonymous, although it appears the Tribune knows who Individual A is. And I still think there's something kind of puzzling and troubling about that to me. If that person were really concerned about what Denny Hastert did and could do to other people, granted he's an old man now, he doesn't have access to a boy's locker room, he wouldn't have blackmailed him. He would have tried to, he would have tried to do something more about this.
It's a tough one. I imagine that this.
Think about that. We're all standing in support of somebody who just shook him down for millions of dollars.
I don't think we really are, though. There are five victims total, and the one who testified at sentencing was not the shakedown artist. It was the brother of Tom Cross, who used to be the Republican leader of Illinois in the House.
A protege of Dennis Hastert.
A protege of Dennis, who was, had he not agreed to give a victim impact statement, we probably wouldn't even be looking at 1.5 years of prison time for Denny Hastert. So I'm not so sympathetic to the guy who shook him down, but I am sympathetic to the Scott Crosses. And really, are we sure there aren't more out there? I mean, how often do child sex abusers just do this for a certain period of time in their life?
Here's my thing, the judge on the bench, John, referred to the former Speaker of the House as a serial child molester. I mean, that's a pretty remarkable thing, a Speaker of the House of the United States as a serial child molester. But here's what struck me about that is that Hastert asked Tom Cross for a letter of recommendation for his sentencing, right?
A letter of support.
Mm-hmm. Letter of support. Hastert knew there were five accusers, right?
I don't know.
I suppose he asked, I hope
that his subscription to the Tribune has not expired.
Well, if he's reading,
he kind of knew.
So you would think that he would know who these five potentials might be, and yet he still asked Cross for a letter of support, which tells me that he didn't expect Scott Cross to be one of the five. If you take that further, that means that there are more than five.
Well, he said that at the sentencing that he didn't remember that he said, "I'm not going to contest what Scott Cross is the name. Yeah. I'm not going to contest what he said," but he said he had no memory of it. I don't know. It seems actually possible to me that he doesn't have an independent memory of it.
Of a person like this is so convoluted. Maybe he thinks, look, that was a terrible night for you. I'm a complicated, flawed person, but look at all the good I did. You had a good career. You were a standout athlete and student. You know what I mean? I suppose that Denny Hastert, like a lot of parish priests, think that maybe not the end justifies the means, but I did more good than I did harm. Right. I can imagine somebody like that.
Well, there's some psychology, too, that suggests that when you that sometimes abusers and Hastert, they're putting him in this category, you do compartmentalize what you have done and you kind of put it in a lockbox. And also the incident with Scott Cross, not to minimize it in any way whatsoever, but it was a one-time incident, whereas I think with some of the other accusers, it was more of an ongoing, quote-unquote, relationship where he would have had more memory of it.
I think he admitted to that with the Reinbold, right? The young man who's now dead. I think he admitted that he did confirm that he sexually abused him. But he did make a distinction between that and his memory of the Scott Cross thing, which Kristen is right. I think it was a one-time thing. And I think it was also a one-time thing with Individual A, as I recall, the one whose lawsuit is proceeding.
What did you guys make? Was there much said about the rush to interpret the judge's findings. I was reading about that overseas, but that Channel 9 got it wrong, and I think some other outlets got it wrong.
I got it wrong, John.
Did you really, Steve?
Yes, I did.
And how did that happen, and how did you feel about that afterwards?
Well, I felt terrible about it, and I still do. And what the situation was, we had these reporters in the overflow room tweeting out what was going on. And there was a flurry of excitement, and there were people tweeting from the Tribune Media that it was 2 years court supervision.
Yeah.
And that was it. And then there were other outlets tweeting it as well as the anchor
CNN.
There. Yeah. And so as the anchor, you know, I saw that and I rushed to it. And it was a big mistake on my part. We had a reporter there, Ryan Burrow, and he was actually having some transmission problems. But, you know, had I to do it over again, I would have relied on my own guy and waited for my own guy to report it. I didn't. I reported what others were reporting, which we do all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah.
But it was wrong. We screwed up.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Stephen. I'm sorry I brought it up. I didn't realize
that. No, it happened.
The mitigating thing here is that at least it was not the other way. At least you didn't say, he's going to jail, and then have to
right.
take that back. I mean, that's, I mean.
So we were wrong in a less worse way.
Less worse way.
On the upside, he is going to go to jail for a while. I've been in that position before. I suppose we all have, although maybe Eric and Kristen, it's less urgent for you, but we're on the air live. We have people there. And what you then need to do is sit down and read, you know, 50 pages sometimes to have a real good sense of it, or at least those first 10 that, you know, they have the summary in. And and while you're doing that,
well, newspapers used to have that luxury. They don't have that.
As President Dewey once said,
our business reporter, Kim Jansen, who used to be a federal courts reporter, was sort of correcting the record while this was all happening on Twitter. And the next day he came out with an explanation and just saying it was understandable for people to misinterpret that, because you don't normally start with release at the beginning, but the court rules have changed. And so now judges address what's going to happen at the time of release first, and then they get to their actual sentence. And you wouldn't know that. I wouldn't know that if you weren't covering courts on a regular
basis. Well, it was Kim's tweets that drained all the blood from my face.
Oh, yeah.
Because I saw you said, hey, wait, this isn't it. And that's when we started questioning it. You know, I think it's in Bolingbrook, where I don't know if you saw this, but there's a sign that says, I think it's Hassert Boulevard, named after the Hassert family in Bolingbrook.
Oh, yeah,
and all that
I did
they've
see
done.
This today, yeah.
And people are outraged, and they want the signs taken down. And Bolingbrook actually put up a sign that says Hassert Boulevard is named after the Hassert family, not Dennis Hassert.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's this rush now to increase the punishment. I think that's part of it.
Of the
They're going after statues of Hassert, and a lot of that's been gone. But they're going after what I think, frankly, are unrelated pensions and things like that, too.
I missed Donald Trump's foreign policy speech. What was the general interpretation of that? Too few specifics, or was it a great speech?
I'm going to let Eric. I think Eric probably. I didn't watch it yet. I meant to. It's been on my list, but I really feel ill-equipped to talk about it when I didn't actually hear what he had to say.
I watched it this morning. And
Tanzania? Did you like that?
No, I didn't notice that. He said Tanzania instead of Tanzania.
Yeah.
The thing that just launched me and made it, you know, I thought, oh, shit, was when he said he was talking about all the embarrassments that the Obama administration has heaped on the United States, how the world doesn't respect us. And then he went on to spend a fair amount of time talking about the Chicago bid for the Olympics and how we finished fourth on that final day, and that President Obama made a long and expensive trip to Copenhagen for the pitch. And then he said he should not have gone unless he knew what the outcome of that decision was going to be, of the Olympic Committee. I thought, well, that's not exactly how these things work. They don't tell you. You have to wait.
Well, it is sometimes in diplomacy, if you're going to be meeting with another head of state, often those things are very arranged ahead of time. You don't meet with somebody, you know, in an open-ended way. You meet
Wasn't
with someone to formalize
something. Wasn't the entire U.S. delegation largely privately funded?
Oh, I think it probably was. I don't think the president goes anywhere privately funded, though. He's got to take secret
service. Fair enough. But, I mean, really, of all of the, this is his major foreign policy speech, and he goes back to our bid for the Olympics? I thought that was odd. Anyway, Eric, what did you want to say about
that? I'm just saying that I'm not sure that it's that unusual for foreign heads of state to go and lobby for Olympic bids. I don't either.
And whatever cost that is, it was negligible compared to.
And thank God he failed because the last thing we would need.
You don't want those games.
Oh, come on, we could be gearing up for it right now.
Oh my gosh,
I would love that.
All the problems in Rio have just made me think.
Well,
wow,
at least we don't have
those
Zika virus, right? I mean, everything's going wrong with that thing.
But, you know, to get back to your question about this speech, it was a mess, I thought. I mean, he was talking about he wants us to be unpredictable and yet a reliable partner, and he wants to go in and just – he acts like we can just go in. We're just going to destroy ISIS. We'll do this. We will bring peace to the Middle East. We will be a stabilizing force in the Middle East, and yet we will not be interventionist. His whole slogan was America First, which has echoes of Charles Lindbergh and the isolationists who wanted to keep us out of World War II. Oh,
and yet Senator Bob Corker, the Republican chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee, said he liked the speech.
So did Rush Limbaugh, apparently.
Well,
so
but
did
I
Vladimir
mean,
Putin, by
but
the way.
You've got guys like Corker now jumping on the bandwagon a little bit or being less critical, which I think is a telling sign.
You've got a lot of Republicans jumping on the bandwagon now because he looks completely inevitable.
The thing was
he
so,
does.
You know, it. I'm surprised that people don't talk more about the emperor has no clothes nature of this thing. It's like, guys, he's even saying now I'm going to act more presidential. I'm going to cool it down, and you're going to see I'm going to be very. I could be so presidential, and so then he marches out in front of a bunch of flags, and you know, it is like a child pretending to be a president now, and we're all going along with that when like we didn't remember 2 days earlier or you know, month actually the latest riots took place afterwards, but it. It's amazing to me how transparent this guy is, and people don't seem to call him on
Got
that.
A big pat on the back from Bob Knight, the general, this week in Indiana.
Oh, my God, I saw that, too.
And Bobby Knight said, you know, well, in addition to saying he'd be willing to drop the bomb, said, you know, he was just like Harry Truman, who Bobby said was one of the three greatest American presidents. I mean, it wasn't bad. I don't know if I'd put him at number three.
Hmm. Hey, what did you make of the pairing of Cruz and Fiorina? What are we thinking about them?
Kristen?
Well, I mean, I like them. I like her. I think she was.
What do you really, like about her?
You know, I just think she was very, during all the debates, she was the most composed. I think she probably knows more about foreign policy than Donald Trump does, for sure. And I think it would be, you know, for the conservative right wing of the party, it would be a great ticket. But the timing of that and the fact that the numbers just are melting away for Cruz, it just seemed like kind of a, you know, it was a headline grabber. They were trying to pivot and put the story back on themselves. And it felt just very artificial to me.
Hmm.
But I like her.
You do like her.
I do.
See,
yeah.
I think she performed well at the kids' table debate. But I think the more you listen to her, the more. And I don't have examples, so I shouldn't even say it. But you know, she would state things as fact that clearly weren't true. She would exaggerate situations.
Oh, and no politicians do that.
No, maybe not. I mean, I don't know.
But her business record was really awful. But
that's one of them. She said, well, I created 10,000 jobs. It was because she acquired another company, right?
Right.
And then was drummed out of the corporation for doing it.
And she laid off, you know, had to lay off thousands of people.
Laying off a lot. Boy, I got a lecture from my brother in business not that long ago, and he said laying off thousands of people is what companies do. It doesn't make that a bad person that does it. They
right,
hate
exactly.
But
she didn't.
But she
claim
job creation.
She was a secretary who rose to CEO. Well, so you cannot ignore.
She's a lot more honest.
No. Chris, I'm gonna fight back on that narrative. She was a part-time secretary when she was going through business school. That's like saying that I'm a dishwasher who rose to become a columnist for the Tribune.
You should be very proud of yourself.
Like, she wasn't. No, but it wasn't like she was.
I used to change hotel beds. Now I'm sitting here next to you.
She was in the steno pool, and they said, you, Carla, you have promised we're moving you up to junior executive. It was a part-time job.
Oh, I think you got to give her a break, Eric. Really? I think if you rise to the level she did as a woman today, that's still saying something.
No, I'm just – and well, but her record at Hewlett-Packard, she did not take that company and turn it around. She laid off a bunch of people, but not in the service of training that company.
And she got drummed out.
And she got drummed out, yeah. I mean, and I also think she makes Hillary Clinton look warm and fuzzy. She seems so cold.
Oh, she does, right. Kristen.
Do you say that about the male candidates?
People say it about Hillary Clinton all the time.
I don't even think it's a given that she makes Hillary look warm and fuzzy. I think she's just crisp and competent. I thought from the very beginning, I thought she was going to leapfrog from the kids' table. She did briefly, and then move way up. And boy, she had some momentum, and then it kind of went away. But I don't think she's a bad choice for any of them, to be honest with you.
It was a strange time to pick a. It had a real whiff of desperation because usually this is part of your, especially if you're going into a brokered or a negotiated convention. You're going to want to be able to have some sort of chips to play, and make that decision when you can maybe
he's
get
got
the
no
most
chips
delegates
if he
out
doesn't
of
win Indiana, you know. And if you look at how fast things move now, he did that on Wednesday, right? So yeah. Tuesday night, Trump just crushes him. I mean, Cruz didn't win a single county in five states. He got crushed. So then Wednesday morning or Wednesday afternoon, they come out with this big announcement, and Cruz sort of takes the narrative back. It's Cruz Carly. And then 2 hours later, Donald Trump stands alongside Bobby Knight, and all of a sudden the Cruz Carly thing is gone. Bobby Knight. And it's just amazing how fast these stories turn.
And today it's Governor Mike Pence.
Mike Pence
is endorsing.
Which will be significant for Cruz.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, you don't have a 24-hour cycle anymore, do you, Steve? You can't even bank on having the news ball for the day. You could get trumped in a matter of hours, and sometimes by things that really aren't all that important, but it's the shiny new object.
Well, let me talk. To speak of something that's not at all important, but did seem to make a lot of news over this week, was when Ted Cruz referred to the basketball hoop as a basketball ring. That was like all over my Twitter feed. People were like, what kind of a doofus?
What a dumbass. Can I just say that? What a dumbass. You say that in Indiana?
In Indiana.
Oh, my gosh.
With drama, right? Because he's at the Hoosiers gym. Who's got a tape measure? Let's measure
and
this.
And he kept claiming that, you know, Hoosiers was one of his favorite movies. And what a fake. I mean, that is just...
I have never seen a guy... A candidate. You can say what you want about Donald Trump. I have never seen a candidate where his party members hate him so much, and not just that, are willing to say it. Right? I mean,
what John Boehner said you referred to.
John Boehner, but others. I mean, Lindsey Graham said what? Something to the effect that you could kill Ted Cruz on the floor of the Senate and no one would testify against you.
Yeah, right, exactly.
You know, this is another Republican. Boehner calling him Lucifer in the flesh and said he was a miserable son of a bitch. It's remarkable.
Well, do we think now that it's not going to be a contested convention because of Trump sweeping and Indiana's going to vote for him too.
He's up by 8 points the last poll I saw in Indiana. Trump is, and I don't know if this Mike Pence endorsement's going to make much of a difference. Sometimes these gubernatorial endorsements
it did in Wisconsin
can help.
Scott Walker was a big help.
True.
But
the
that's
whole
true.
Organization, Wisconsin, was a really interesting study because the conservative media got behind Cruz. And Scott Walker and his apparatus got behind Cruz, and Cruz sailed to victory in Wisconsin. But it's a different race now. As Steve points out, Cruz was thumped on what they were calling Super Tuesday 4.
Right. Stop naming things, please.
If you have four of them, they all can't be super. That's my new rule.
Well, I was really discouraged to see it as comprehensive as it was because I was having a conversation with myself about this, and I said, but that wasn't a sweeping victory for Trump. That was a sweeping victory for Trump among super Republicans who turned out for primaries in those states. And, you know, we need to keep exercising that sort of reality.
Well, that goes to the general election, but it was a sweeping victory for Trump because, you know, he's running against two other people. And they used to say that his ceiling was 28% and then 32%. And he was pulling in 67-64% in some of these states. If this was in anyone else but Trump, we wouldn't even be considering that there was still a contest.
I think it's more evidence that the whole effort, the Stop Trump movement, that they are actually doing
helping.
They're helping him. They are invigorating that base, which is what I've been saying all along. And I think that the thumping was proof of that.
And I think it was a terrible misfire for Kasich and Cruz to announce on Monday, I think.
Yeah,
it was
Sunday night announcement.
That they are going, it was Sunday night, you're right, it's late Sunday,
right.
Where that they were going to... conspire, collude, which is I think a too negative a term. What they basically said was, look, Cruz said, I'll take Indiana, and Kasich said, I'll take Oregon and
New Mexico.
And we'll split these up, and then that alliance...
Well,
to
it's
stop
like on Survivor.
It was. It was like reality TV, exactly. But that alliance fell apart in a day.
Oddly honest about it, and then sadly not honest enough about it, because they put out the press releases almost simultaneously, said this is what's going to happen. And then, you know, Kasich was asked the next day, and he goes, well, I'm not going to tell people in Indiana not to vote for me. And then they kept saying, well, there's no deal. There's no deal. They should have just said, damn right there's a deal.
Yeah,
we know that neither one of us can win outright. We are banking on a contested convention to stop Donald Trump, and this is how we're doing it. Absolutely, there's a deal. Let's stop him now and then talk about it in Cleveland. And they just wouldn't take that next step,
John,
and it fell apart.
John, you talk to the public probably more than any of us put together here on your show. Do you talk to a lot of Trump supporters, and do you have the same feeling that I do when I hear them on the radio, which is that they are committed and not particularly ideologically Republican, a lot of them? I mean, I think there are a lot of disaffected Democrats who think, like, hell yes, knock over the apple cart, start again, make America great. I just have this feeling that there is this core of support for Trump is not Republican or conservative so much as it's got this grassroots feel to it.
Yeah, no, I think that's spot on, Eric. And, you know, it's a little bit like the Tea Party movement, but it never had a central figure. Imagine if you distilled everything that the Tea Party was about last time and poured it right into one person and then blew it up some more. That's kind of what's happening here. I mean, you know, Kristen's once told us on this podcast that we need not sort of dismiss these people just because we don't like the candidate. But I got it, not to be melodramatic about it, but I every now and then just think, oh, I thought I knew America better than this. I don't like this. I don't like this movement. I don't like that man. I worry about these people in my midst who would throw in with him and all of the baggage that comes with that. It's weird, isn't it? Isn't it weird to you guys that this is happening right in front of you? It's happening, and I'm dismayed by that.
Well, and the point is that people, like, when they see a Cruz and Kasich getting together, they think this only inflames them. They're like,
yeah, you can't do anything about it.
These insiders, establishment Republicans are arrayed against him because he's going to upset their apple cart. So
we should be happier. We are living in the city that has more baseball wins than any other city in the United States.
That's not new.
Only two teams. What do you mean that's
not
new?
I'm kidding.
Only two teams have 15, as we speak this, 15 wins or more, and they're the White Sox and the Cubs. And the Nationals, I think, is the other one. Kristen, do you feel that the White Sox are sort of getting buried by all of the love people have for the Cubs? This is their year, too.
Are you trying to tee this up for me, or
I
what?
I wish you could have seen her face.
Except they lost last night. Our pitching was just totally erratic, and so we had a bad loss last night.
What do you mean, our pitching?
Yeah,
thanks. I mean, what's attendance like at the Cell? Are people showing up for the games?
Well, they've been away
for
most
of
the past 2 weeks, and no, attendance has not been great. But it's also been raining and about 40 degrees here, so
32,000 at Wrigley yesterday.
Was there really?
Boy, the prospects of that.
You should see his face right now.
I mean, I wish there were more at the Cell. I really do. But
I do too, really.
The weather didn't keep him away there.
But, I mean, is it too soon to just kind of hope for a Cubs-Sox World
Series?
No,
it's not too soon to hope for
that.
Don't jinx it. Don't jinx it.
No, you know, I hear, I feel, I'm feeling you there, Kristen, but doggone it, that's the sort of thinking that is it. That's the jinx. It's the fear of the jinx. Talk about it. Live it. Love it. Enjoy it.
See what he did there?
What? What did I do?
You turned the jinx back on her.
I did not. Well, I...
It's a double reverse
jinx.
Yes,
you did. My brain is still sorting it out, but you did.
Well, what about, speaking of sports, this Laramie Tunsil story? He's a kid who plays for Ole Miss. He might have gone number one in the draft, which is coming out of Chicago this week. And then moments before he was probably going to be picked, on his Instagram account surfaces video of him smoking pot. He said it was some time ago. He had a gas mask on. It was hooked up to a bong. It was a hell of a contraption.
I mean, what the heck? Right.
What
happened to joints and bowls? That was my...
You know, I wonder if that just sort of made it worse visually. It was so weird, you know?
Yes.
Right. I think what it is the NFL establishment doesn't want him taking any drugs except those given by the trainers.
Really, in a way. So what we have here is a kid in college who is smoking pot.
There were some other issues with him in that story that I read.
He had reached out to some officials at school wanting some payments for his mom, and And, you know, he's had a series of these things. And it's funny because at the press conference, when they asked him about it, he goes, yeah, I did that. Yep, that was me. It was a long time ago. I made a mistake.
These are young men, and they are not always that mature. And lots of them smoke pot. And I'm not...
With gas masks.
Well, I don't know.
But don't do that. Just don't do that.
I actually, if I'm a general manager, I don't really hold the pot smoking against him.
They did, though. He was supposed to go first,
well,
and he didn't. Was it the pot smoking, or was it the...
I literally think the imagery of this. If they had video of him at a concert taking a toke on a joint and handing it to the next guy, I don't think we're having this conversation.
Look at all the THC that is wasted without benefit of a mask.
I know. I guess it's a better high.
It shows industry inefficiency on this part.
It was a hookah. That's like he's going to come out and say it was a hookah pipe. It was just to calm me down. I mean, so we find out later that his Twitter account was hacked.
Right.
But it looked like he had posted this because, I mean, I don't know. I assumed when all this was breaking, he posts this because he thinks it's funny. Moments before the draft, I mean...
Although we do see, I want to argue with myself for a little bit. That remember Johnny Manziel? He was the number one quarterback.
Manziel,
is that how you say it? That he had, character issues were front and center when they drafted him. But they said, well, he's a hell of a great quarterback. But those character issues have really presaged a really lousy NFL career, and he may be out of this league now forever.
Well, look, I mean, the GMs and the draft people, I mean, their careers and their livelihood depends on this too. And, you know, if you make a risky pick, they're out
knowingly.
Of a job.
Knowingly.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
It's not that he
wouldn't get picked, but if you risk the first pick or, you know, one of the first five picks in the draft, 10, he went to 13, may have cost him $7 million in lost revenue as a result of front.
It's very hard to second guess these people because they spend months poring over everything and looking at the history of the draft and just when they make these picks. So it's like.
Well, it's not the smoking dope. It's that you're too stupid to know that that's not going to hurt you. You know, I mean, I don't care if you smoke pot or not, but don't you think a video of you smoking pot out there that way might compromise your career? Oh, well, if you're too stupid to know that, then maybe I don't want you. It's not the pot per se.
Yeah, I see that. But I mean, he may end up being just a hell of a great NFL player.
Oh, yeah, he probably will be. And he may be a hell of an NFL player who still gets in trouble because that's the package. That's why I do not want to be an NFL owner.
I would imagine that being a star athlete at that age does not enhance your maturity. That these guys are probably less mature than your average 20, 21-year-old because of everything they've been coddled, pampered, as they've been gone through life. And I don't know, I'm guessing that as they grow up into young men, a lot of them just put that stuff behind them or are able to compartmentalize it.
Oh, yeah. This conversation I was having with my son about this, who was following the draft, and I said, he may turn out to be a great NFL player, maybe even a great guy. This video doesn't tell you much about that, but like, do you want to risk your reputation, Mr. General Manager, on picking that kid and he turns out to be a bust when you had the video the day of the draft? So there he goes, down to 13. Let's do our recommendations, kids. Something you're reading, watching, listening to that you thought was really good. Anybody want to go first? Any recommendations from the group this week?
I'll go first since everybody else is looking at their phones.
Tattletale.
Hey.
I've been...
Don't bust us out.
Inside.
There's going to be a query Bertrand and Alliance.
I don't know if I recommended this last
Trump
season.
Wins.
Between powers, activate.
All right.
Inside, go ahead, Eric. This had better be good, by the way. What is your recommendation?
All the build-up here. Inside Amy Schumer is back for another season on Comedy Central. It's a great show. Amy Schumer is hilarious.
Whose jokes are she using this time?
Is she stealing jokes? Is she a joke stealer?
She had trouble with that, yeah.
Oh, well, I think these are original, but probably her writers. She's stealing her. But it's a good show. They're very funny, so I recommend it.
How about you, Steve Bertrand?
I got strong-armed into joining Amazon Prime this week.
Oh, yes.
For 30 days, my trial. And now every time my wife buys something, I get an email, which is not going to be good for the relationship. But I was told by a buddy of mine, I said, you got to watch this show, Catastrophe. And it's about an American guy who's on a business trip to London. He meets this woman in a bar, an Irish woman who lives in London, and they hit it off, have a torrid 6-day romp through London. He goes back to Wisconsin, I think it is, Chicago, mm-hmm. and finds out she's pregnant. And so then he moves back to London, and they try to make a go of it. It's kind of a comedy. It's a in-between comedy, dramedy. It's 30-minute episodes. I'm halfway through the first season, and it's definitely entertaining.
It's worth it. I've seen both seasons.
Have you?
It's fun.
Yeah.
It's a really fun
show. You might
show.
Have talked about this. This is.
I may
really?
Have.
I think, you,
oh,
I think you recommended it.
I may have.
You busting him back, Kristen?
Yeah.
Although, no, wait, Steve's part of your alliance, so I think that's Steve true. Gets to mention
that's
that.
Right. The alliance doesn't ever work for
By the way,
well.
Did you guys see that Will Ferrell is making
Broke
a movie?
Broke down that quickly.
Will Ferrell is thinking about making a movie about Ronald Reagan, who in the throes of his, you know, who's just falling into Alzheimer's, and then everybody else is trying to manage that situation. This is the premise for a script that's very hot in Hollywood, but everybody's afraid to make the movie. Farrell wants to play Josh Brolin would play Ronald Reagan, but Farrell wants to make the movie. And the idea is that they would convince Ronald Reagan that he was in a movie about the president and that that was his life now. And maybe he could get his head around that. Meanwhile, his minions would comically manage the country or something. And they say it's not a Saturday Night Live skit. It's kind of a dark comedy, dramedy, if you will. But there's a lot of pushback on that.
It sounds like an excellent premise for a movie, but I'm not sure why you have to drag Reagan into it. I mean, you could just make it a fictional
kind of a
character.
Being there sort of
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, exactly.
By the way, my recommendation this week, two apps, just having returned from Europe, I got to tell you, if you travel, get that Google Translator app. You can write with your finger, you can type on a keyboard or speak into it, and it will perfectly, instantly translate what you're seeing or trying to say. French to English, English to French. It's so easy to use, so very helpful. And then the other thing that really helped us on our trip was WhatsApp, where you can text to people via Wi-Fi, essentially, without having to pay those long-distance fees. And boy, was that a lifesaver for us. We really like that feature as well. Two good apps for travelers. Kristen, what do you like?
I hope I'm not repeating what somebody else recommended, but Just Not Sports, this blog that has posted interviews with women sports writers who get harassed on Twitter. The hashtag is more than mean, and they brought in just regular guys to read out loud some of the tweets and emails that these women receive on a regular basis. It's very jarring and very powerful, and I think needed because there is just too much anonymous harassment on Twitter. I've experienced it. I'm sure you guys have too. And maybe the only way to get around that is to shame the people who do it. And it's a really powerful video.
So it's a video blog, huh?
It's a video on Just Not Sports. It's only about 2.5 minutes long. But these men know that they're reading tweets, but they don't realize what the tweets actually say. And then they're forced to say some just, you know.
These are involving some local sportscasters, including Sarah Spain.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no kidding,
and
really?
These men are this guy's off the street, and they said, here's a list of tweets. And they start off kind of like, you know, you're an idiot.
You're
a
terrible sportscaster.
And then they get more and more vile. And
threatening,
actually. And the men who have to read them are mortified and apologetic.
Well, it's too bad because they're not responsible for it.
Well, but they're not.
But the point of the video is to show how uncomfortable, how no civilized person would say something like this to somebody's face. Even if you're just quoting somebody, it's a horrible thing to say. And the fact that people sit at their little keyboards in their parents' basement and they attack people like this, especially women. I think this is much worse for women and minorities.
Yeah, I think it's probably more personal for women or sexual. I mean, John, you probably get nasty texts. I get nasty
from you guys.
From us. But what people don't realize when they text the radio station and say, I got a guy, every time I'm on the air, says, here comes the most boring hour in radio. Mm. Every time. And I mean it. And I call them. Because when they text me, I've got their phone number. So I call them and I say, hey, I saw your text and I'm sorry you feel that way. And you know, 9 times out of 10, they start to blubber. Oh, I wasn't really talking about you.
And I didn't mean you.
I didn't mean that. I'm so sorry. Hey, you're really cool.
Boy, I text him back all the time, Steve. And I think I'm really good at disarming these people. It's kind of weird.
Because they don't think they're going to be confronted.
Well, I also don't think they even feel that much what they said. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right, right. It's cheap language.
But that you would go face to face or, you know, voice to voice with that is... That's strong. I don't have those balls. That's amazing. That is Steve Bertrand, who does have those balls.
The brass ones.
Wait, yes. I'm going to have to text you back now.
This sounds like the presidential campaign.
Yeah,
we
no
talked
kidding,
about
really.
Bathrooms, penis size, and now big balls.
You sing it, Ted.
That's Steve Bertrand from WGN Radio, Eric Zorn and Krista McQuarrie from the Chicago Tribune. I'm John Williams. We're the Mincing Rascals. We'll drop another podcast on you next week. Thank you, Kristen Decker and Bob Ferguson, our engineer and our producer. The Mincing Rascals.
You little rascal, you.
The Mincing Rascals podcast is distributed by the WGN Plus Podcast Network. You can listen on the WGN Plus app or online at WGNplus.com, or you can subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes.